music's always been my motivator, but code is the canvas for me. And so while that was going on, I always knew I wanted to eventually start my own company. And then 2 years into that, I eventually did.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. Sometimes success has its roots in mischief. After all, being a good mischief maker requires a certain amount of creativity. The best ones think outside the box, and it takes talent to scramble the system. Steve Martocci is the founder of music tech platform Splice. And when he was a kid, he was known for all kinds of troublemaking, breaking into the school computers just because he could, never harming anything, but just having fun. And everyone in his town in Long Island put up with it because it was clear that someday he would take those skills and build something big. That didn't take long. Martocci went on to co-found the group messaging service GroupMe, which sold to Skype in August 2011 for a reported $85 million, and he was just 27. In 2013, he co-founded Splice, a technology platform for music creators that streamlines the process of creating and sharing music and gives musicians more time to focus on the creative process. Then in 2014, he co-founded Blade, a private plane service. In total, Martocci's startups have raised over $100 million. Last summer, I had the chance to catch up with Martocci at Splice headquarters. I was surprised to discover that even as a kid, while the rest of us dreamed of playing shortstop for the Yankees or becoming the next big hip-hop artist, Martocci always wanted to be the next Bill Gates. I've always loved those kids who know they wanted to be entrepreneurs from the beginning. So that's where I started with Steve.
Well, I knew I wanted to own a software company since I was in like sixth grade. I think I tried to register giftcertificates.com, but you had to like fax a form in, I think, to right. do it. And someone beat me to it back in the 90s.
That's kind of crazy. That's like, you know, Bill Gates type stuff, like wanting to own a software company in sixth grade. Like most kids want to be like center field for like the New York Yankees or whatever it might be. But you really, you knew from that early stage, like you wanted to build a business.
Yeah. I mean, I loved software and, you know, I wasn't even a great programmer. It was more of like a tinkerer in the beginning, but I kept building. It was just such a, you know, place for creative flow and ideas that I actually felt like I could treat as a canvas to create. And that, you know, started in high school building like games on my calculator and kind of like games that helped me on my tests.
That's smart.
Yeah, it was fun.
I wish I knew you in high school.
Yeah, it was a good time.
A lot better.
So like a lot of it was more just having fun and not really like necessarily fully business focused in the beginning. And then you just kind of kept building up tools along the way. But it was always a real desire to create through software. And so, you know, that continued from in college. I still hadn't started a business, but I had started building websites that were like used by people. I built like it's called onthenext.com. It was a website.
What was that?
Yeah, it was a website that was applying like fantasy sports concepts to TV shows.
Okay.
So you could like for the season of 24, you could be like, how many times will Jack Bauer change his clothes?
Sure.
How many people will he kill? And like you'd follow on week to week and like it was
totally
pretty fun.
Great idea.
Yeah. And that was cool. But I just, you know, every time. So I think those were these moments of applying things I was learning in college. I think it's a cycle of going through like learning moment, like learning periods for me, and then like really intense execution periods, then back to learning periods, then really intense execution periods.
Yeah, it seems like that through your career is kind of like when those big moments came, and we'll talk about that, like you had done the learning, you had prepared and you were ready. And I'm sure in some cases you know, may have been ahead of your time, but take me through. So you come out of school and are you an entrepreneur right away? Are you thinking about getting a job?
So as I come out of school and I'm on fish tour,
Wait, you're following fish.
Yeah, following fish. Yeah, not work.
Not unusual, but
going and seeing, you know, and seeing tons of concerts. And then luckily Fish breaks up. And
luckily.
And then I was like, oh man, college is over. Fish broke up. It's time to get a job, I guess. And got a programming job working for this website, MaxMD, that owned the rights to the .md web domain.
Okay.
And that was my first job. And then so it was the first time I was in production dealing with like at scale or just like big. It wasn't fully at scale yet, but like people depending on what I was building. And I made this huge mistake on the second day on the job. I totally remember it. I like ran a SQL query that somehow it was a select statement, but somehow updated every record in the database. And we were leasing it from the country of Moldova.
Oh, wow.
And they just like call in a panic being like, you're trying to steal our domains. What are you doing?
Oh,
and
I caused this like an battle
between, between countries on my second day on the job. And still, if you go into like the DNS records of that, you'll see that date. It was, you know, October
4th, 2004. I love
it. Yeah, that was traumatic. So, you know, and spent 2 years basically in learning mode there, dealing with real production level code, people depending on me, businesses depending on me and building.
And that's what you learn while right at that point, kind of, I mean, you come off following fish, right? You're like, no responsibilities, I'm sure, but
building
you go
things
there.
For fun on the side, building music stuff and things that I loved. And because like music's always been my motivator, but code is the canvas for me. And so while that was going on, I always knew I wanted to eventually start my own company. And then 2 years into that, I eventually did.
So how does that happen? So you're there 2 years. Mm-hmm. It seems like you learned a lot, obviously had a lot of responsibilities. And then how does that first moment come where you say, you know what, I'm going out there and I'm going to start my own business?
Well, I had a lot of support from my parents in this, to be honest. They had always, you know, my dad had always known since I was a kid about how much I was into this stuff. And like when he's like, when you're ready, if you don't want to go to grad school, like I'm going to help you. And
you
so,
wanted to be your partner. You saw talent.
And a couple people in town did. So it was like friends and family that knew that like someday this kid's going to build something.
Yeah. Where'd you grow up?
Manhasset, Long
okay,
Island.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So like it was just kind of known. I had gotten in trouble for like hacking school computers and high school. Yeah.
What'd you do?
I mean, look, it was like the early days of like having a computer lab there. Right. And like we had this really beautiful computer lab and they kept trying to install all this like security software to keep us out from the network and stuff.
That's great.
And they would kind of like I was like the tester. They would like, see, can you break this? And
right,
I'd like keep coming up with ways to get in and they would reward me. And I was like I was probably like the first kid that had ever burned a CD. I remember it was a 1X CD burner. So it took like 74 minutes to burn a disc. And if you like breathed on the computer, it would have an error. So like you had to like have this one computer that wasn't touched for like 74 minutes to burn a whole CD. And it failed and failed. And it was, and finally got it out. And I remember walking around with the CD and being like, I made this.
That's
and people
awesome.
Were like, wait, what? That's not true. How did you do that? So, and then I eventually just like one day kind of took it a little too far. And like, I managed to get access to the network and I just changed all I did. I didn't do anything bad. I just changed all the background images on all the computers, like across the whole school.
Could
it was
have been
like
much worse.
Yeah, it was like there's 4 days left of school. It was like some tie dye picture or something like that.
Sometime.
So yeah,
ready to go see fish.
Yeah, so it was just you know, and so it was a lot of that just tinkering, and people knew that I was going to do that stuff. So
right.
I had good friends and family support when I started, and the idea wasn't like it was during the MySpace era.
Yeah.
And so,
that.
Yeah. And so it was, I was trying to build the digital version of the Lance Armstrong bracelet for your MySpace page.
Very interesting.
And so MySpace,
those bracelets were big.
They were huge at the time.
Millions and millions of dollars, obviously before anyone heard anything negative about Lance.
Yeah,
but
totally.
It still raised a lot of money for a good cause.
And so what I wanted to do, could not put a video. You couldn't put anything but an image onto your MySpace page. So what I did was I built this system that would render images on the fly, like dynamic images. So you could put dynamic content onto your MySpace page. And it turns out this was not a great idea for charities. They didn't care about this. They didn't know how to work with me. I didn't know how to sell into charities technology and all this
right.
stuff. But it turns out that technology was really useful for email marketing.
Interesting.
Because you could change email after you sent it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And how did you realize, you know, once you're doing this idea and then, because that's such a common theme for entrepreneurs. It's like you're building a business for one reason and then you realize, whoa, this is actually a much better idea for something else. How'd that come about?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly that moment, but I remember being like, this is really cool. Where else does this solve a problem? And that was the one thing I was like, wow. Oh, you know what? I think it was initially just being like, oh, you could also put the Lance Armstrong bracelet as your email signature.
Ah.
And then I realized I was like changing email after I sent it, which was like really unique.
Yeah.
So built the technology in that direction and had a couple great clients like Starbucks and Fandango. We were running tests and I mostly like messed up the tests because it was me and like four people like just trying. But I learned and I eventually ran out of money and kind of failed, went into debt and got a job and went back into learning mode.
So that's got to be as an entrepreneur. And I love talking to you now because obviously you've had a lot of success. But initially, what a lot of people don't understand when they might read your bio or even like you started and like you failed in a certain way. I don't even like to call it failure, but like you learned, you grew. Okay, you failed with the business. You had to go back and work for someone else. What does that feel like? Because you're like, you're such a quintessential entrepreneur. Like in sixth grade, you want your own software company. Like how does that, that must have been a hard time for you. How did you feel?
I mean, the New York City venture community was not like it is today. So we tried to raise some money and there was no path. And I was too young in my career. I needed more skills, to be honest. I thought that if I just built the next feature, magic was going to happen. But sales and integrations and stuff, there's so much more to
it. So much more.
And so like, it was hard. I remember like not being able to pay rent. And luckily my landlord was like, let me write out of my lease. He's like, someone's been trying to rent that apartment. And I was like, great. And so moved to a tiny studio apartment and got a job. And I thought with Guilt Group, I'm like, oh, they're sending email with like flash inventory. Yeah. Maybe I can sell them the company from the inside.
Right, right.
So I had a plan.
You go to work for Guilt. What do you, and are you?
So I use software engineering
at
Guilt.
Software engineering.
You know, and that was the biggest learning period of my life, I think. Software at scale. What's amazing about Guilt is you had to be Amazon for 15 minutes a day. And what was cool about that is if you had to be Amazon at all, you have a whole lot to learn. And then every day you basically had a period to learn from your mistakes to get ready for the next day.
Right.
So it was like literally the best learning experience that I could have had.
Right. Because they had these, what I recall, I only recall it because my wife was working at the time when they had, and like, she'd be like, I gotta go.
Flash sales.
It's flash sale starting, right? And it's these 15, it's a flash sale, right?
The that stuff like, would drop at 12 o'clock and like you, it would sell out instantly. So like the demand was insane. And so, we had to be like Amazon level shopping site and you could just like break, see if we made it. If you were, and by the way, in that 15 minute window, if something went wrong,
you really lost. Yeah.
So it was super high pressure, but it was a great, like, every night was a way to learn from your mistakes. So the environment was incredible. And like, you know, what Kevin Ryan and the Guilt team built over there from a people perspective has changed New York City. I mean, like I've gone to like Guilt reunion events and the amount of entrepreneurs, you know, I think, you know, 90% of my team are CTOs or CEOs or founders. And like, it's just absolutely incredible.
That's great.
And so that challenge really brought people together and it was a great learning environment and it showed.
So then what happened? So you're at Guilt, you're doing this, you had started your own business, knowing entrepreneurs, like the whole time, I'm sure you're thinking of what am I doing next?
So music, again, always my passion. I'm building little apps for music on the side. I built a ticketing app that was used to power the Grateful Dead's friends and family ticketing.
Interesting.
My friend had the contract to do the like kind of VIP services for them.
And who's your friend?
My friend Dan Berkowitz.
Dan from CID.
Yeah, you know
that. My whole business prior, I had a business called GoViva. We create unique experiences and events.
Okay.
So I had sold it to CAA. And then I worked for them and we did tons of music experiences and events. And Dan ended up selling the business to Prime Sport, I think. And then, so I've known Dan from back, him and, Chewy and those guys.
Of course, Chewy's great. That's so amazing.
Which it's funny because my business, I was always a sports guy. So we always did experiences to attend the Super Bowl and the Masters. Yeah. And those guys were just like, they just love music.
Yep.
And like, what I've noticed, and you can tell me, is like, anyone who is in, and what I've noticed and being at CAA and dealing with a lot of agents, and they all have a passion for music. Yep. And it's like, if you have that passion, and it's interesting because the business is so unique and different and like it's the Wild West, but so you have this passion.
So did Dan, and we actually met, I think we met while he was tour managing the Disco Biscuits, which is a band that's right. even more deep down the jam band rabbit hole than Fish is.
Yeah,
so I've seen Fish.
I remember he had that, like, he was doing the experiences, and then
his first one was he built a bus called, he called it the Hunka Bunka bus, to take us to Starland Ballroom so people didn't have to drive and that's get great. Like drunk driving and stuff. It was amazing.
Smart idea.
So we've known each other for a really long time. And so he got that deal, and he was just like, look, the Dead are using fax forms for their friends and family ticketing.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't like deal with this. And I was like, I'll fix it. And so on my own, on the side, built this ticketing platform that Dan always says, he's like, it was the best platform built. And like, he was using it, powered the whole tour. We were starting to get real clients for it. It was becoming a thing. And then, you know, GroupMe happened, and I'll tell that real quick.
Yeah. So Groove. So you got, how does that come about? Because this actually, from a ticketing perspective and knowing that business, that actually could have built into a big business, but it sounds like some other major idea happened.
Yeah.
And how did it happen? And how did you take the, you know, make the turn to follow?
So I was like, as a decent programmer, but I'm still like, I make a lot of noise. I always say I'm like the worst employee you could have, because
most entrepreneurs
are. Yeah. I mean, so like, you know, at Gilt, we had gotten the engineers had gotten a little restless and wanted to build stuff. And they hosted this internal hackathon, which was like 24 hours a day. Okay, you engineers, show us what you want to build.
Right.
And
they're like, let's keep them happy. Let's let them do this. Yeah. Then build
and also, we want to hear your ideas. Like, it made sense. And so we had 24 hours, and I built this. I had noticed that all of our competitors were showing their inventory counts through one of these their APIs to power the site to make sure they could show like four products left, that stuff. And so in 24 hours, I built this competitive intelligence tool that gave us the real-time revenue of all of our competitors.
That's pretty amazing.
It was crazy. I won an iPad for it.
That's it?
That's it.
Oh, geez.
And
at least you got an iPad, right?
I got an iPad, but to be honest, I got a respect, but like, the company was way too afraid of, you know, there's like, we're the market leader. Why would we go risk like doing anything like this? Like, let's not go pursue this. So I had gotten a little frustrated, you know, but I understood. And then there was this TechCrunch Disrupt hackathon, the first one they had ever done, a few weeks later. So I was like, fuck it, I'm going to enter this, and I'm going to try to win and get seen and all that kind of stuff. And didn't even have a great idea yet, but then met my co-founder, my good friend, Jared Hecht, who I'd also met through Disco
and
Biscuits
this is
and
the
Fish.
So Jared, so he's co-founder for GroupMe.
Well, so we're friends at the time. Does become co-founder of GroupMe, but we're just friends.
You're friends.
We're just
friends. You guys like the same music.
Going to see concerts
together.
Yeah. So, and he, you know, he was at Tumblr at the time.
Okay.
And he always wanted to start a company with me.
Is he a tech guy too? Or is he
he's more on the business side, you know, so at the time. Now he's the CEO of a company called Fundera.
Was it a good match?
You know,
for you guys? It
was, we always wanted to work together because he's brilliant, and we have really complementary skill sets. And he would rattle off ideas all the time, and I'd be like, "No, man, I'm not doing that." Like, no. And then it was just a couple of days before this hackathon, and it was his girlfriend at the time, now his wife, was basically like, "Hey, you know, we try to go to all these concerts together, and we can't stay in touch at the shows. Like, can we?" Because there was no group text messaging at the time. And he's like, how do we do it? And you know, there wasn't even full smartphone penetration.
Right, right. What year? So this is when, like,
2010?
10, right at the beginning.
2010,
yeah. Okay.
I think, yeah. So, you know, he tells that to me, and I was like, I think I can do that. And I like just researched for a minute. And then I was like, all right, let's just go in, Jared. Let's do this. We always want to work together. Haven't found the thing. Let's go do 24 hours and solve group text messaging. And so we go to this hackathon.
It's great. 24. I love it, man. It's like, that's nutty. But anyway,
nutty.
So what happened?
And it was nutty. We go to the hackathon, and there was a API company there, Twilio, who's a public company now.
Okay. They're
like APIs for interacting with phone systems, basically. Okay. And they had this one API where you could provision new phone numbers, and then you could do messaging to them. And, you know, it was just this tiny thing where I was like, wait, can I do, I would ask them a couple of questions at the hackathon. Could I do this? Could I provision a phone number? And then could I send messages? And I was like, I think I can build this thing with that API that on the spot learned about that I didn't know about. And that's what we did. And in 24 hours, we were up and running. And
did you know what you had at that point? Like, did you realize it?
I mean, we were excited by it, but we were more excited because we were solving our problem.
Right. Like, now you can keep in touch with each other.
I went to the concert. I went to a Disco Biscuits concert at Red Rocks a week later and used
it. It
worked. And then that same thing you were talking about earlier, when you don't realize that the idea is works for so much more, is Jared that weekend couldn't actually come to the concert because one of his family members was having a kid. And then they used it to stay in touch during the, like, you know, whole process. And we were like, oh, this is useful for more than going to concerts together.
Yeah.
And it just kind of started a crazy ride. And that was like, you know, an absurd, I think it was like a 13-month journey until we sold it.
This is, which is kind of crazy because most entrepreneurs, they build a business. I mean, obviously there's different stories, but they grow it. It takes years. You're building this business. There's ups, downs. You guys start this, create this, and then within how many months you get approached to sell the business?
Yeah, I mean, we only had control agreement for 13 months. And, you know, maybe that probably less than a year when we started having conversations.
Did you have any investors or was
it? Yeah. So I was in debt, right? I was in $60,000 debt when I started the company. So I was like, Jared, I can't not be funded for this. I can't miss a paycheck. So we managed to, I didn't know any investors. It's a really funny story. So we didn't win the hackathon, but we.
So funny. I wonder who won. I'm sure there was a major business now.
it was a robot that was hooked up that had a knife and you could like text message it and it would stab something. Like, that's who won. It was a stabbing robot, I think, called Mr. Stabby.
Really?
I think that's who won.
Sort of toy I want to buy for my kid.
Yeah.
Not.
So yeah, what we did get was tickets to Disrupt the conference. And I didn't know really anything about the investor ecosystem.
Sure, how it
works. But Jared
did. Okay.
But he couldn't get out of work the day for the conference. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go. And all of a sudden, I ran into a friend from high school. His name's Eddie Kim. He's an entrepreneur. And I showed him what I built. And he's like, you need to show this to people. And I was like, okay. And just set up. I remember my phone was dying. And we set up in the startup alley of Disrupt. And I just like put my stuff down, charged my phone. And he lined these investors up that just came over and saw it.
So wait, hold on. You go out into like basically an alley.
Yeah.
And he's like, you got to show this to some investors.
To people.
And like, he lines a few guys up.
And I just show them. They're like, this is really cool. And I walk away with a stack of business cards. And I don't know who any of these people are. And then I give the cards to Jared. And he's like, what the fuck? What? And so that kind of like... And then it was amazing. Kevin Ryan from Gilt had always really supported me.
He founded DoubleClick.
Yeah, yeah. He's like the
entrepreneur.
He's the best.
Silicon Alley.
Yeah, he is. He really is. And, you know, he had offered to help fund us. And then we kind of, that was the, like, when I was like, okay, I guess this is going to be a real thing. We ended up going a different path, but just his support and Jared Manning, like, I always say that, like, I created all this value in the first 24 hours, and then Jared creates all this value in this, like, the last 24 hours was like, the way that, you know, he did the
negotiation.
It's incredible.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors. While COVID-19 is having an unprecedented impact on the economies, companies like Gusto are still building tools to support your business and your people through the ups and downs. Payroll and benefits are hard, especially for small businesses. You don't have the time to be an expert in things like taxes and regulations. And old school payroll providers just aren't built for the way you work today. Gusto is making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for small businesses. Modern technology does the heavy lifting, so it's easy to get things right. And why is Gusto better than the other guys? Well, PC Mag and Fit Small Business have called Gusto the best payroll for small businesses. Gusto also makes payroll a breeze. In fact, 9 out of 10 users say Gusto is easier to use than other payroll solutions. Gusto saves you time. 72% of customers spend less than 5 minutes to run payroll. Don't believe it? Just Google them. People love Gusto. How often do you actually love your payroll provider? That is true. So, most small businesses don't have an HR expert, but you don't need one to use Gusto. With great software and great service, you can focus on your business, not payroll and paperwork. And you no longer have to be a big company to get great technology, great benefits, and great services for your team. So, to help support the show, Gusto is offering our listeners an exclusive, limited-time deal. Sign up today, and you'll get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Just go to gusto.com/HSH.
And our next sponsor.
Fully's workplace furniture is designed for health, flow, and balance. And I love that premise. During these uncertain times, Fully is helping people and businesses across the U.S., Canada, and Europe make the transition to working from home with modern, environmentally friendly, and ethically manufactured office furniture. In fact,
Fully sent me over a few pieces to change up my office, and I'll tell you, I love their human-centered approach. My new setup with desk, chairs, and accessories from Fully has had incredible effects on my energy level and efficiency. Especially, I've noticed it during these troubled times. Fully is working hard to continue to ship free, direct, and next day. So I'm telling you, instead of feeling chained to your kitchen table or whatever makeshift workstation you've set up, Fully can help create a space that helps you find your flow. Fully's chairs encourage healthy sitting, both in posture and variability. Fully's products help to incorporate movement into your days in order to keep blood flowing and minds engaged. We need Fully now more than ever, realizing just how important our health and wellness matters today. So, whether you're shopping for yourself or your entire team, Fully is here for you. If you need help transitioning your team, please call us. Take $50 off the Jarvis standing desk when you visit fully.com/HSH. Again, that's fully.com/HSH. It's Fully, everything you need to find your workflow.
And we're back.
Well, it sounds like, you know, for you, was that a learning moment where, I mean, you obviously are extremely skilled and you have a real genius for the technology side and building. It seems like with your initial business, this business coming together with Jared, really kind of you formed a team that you needed to really be successful. Would you say that that's what happened with the partnership and that really like took it to the next level? Do you think you could have done it on your own?
Yeah, well, I couldn't have done that on my own. I think I spent a few years going around and talking to everybody about the importance of co-founders and the importance of delegation and trust and all that, because I clearly knew I could not do that on my own. And so what was good, though, is by at the same time, while I'm in this really intense execution period on the product and technology side, I am learning from him. And I am learning from the struggles that we're having, which, sure, you know, kind of, I think, better prepared me for the next round, the next startup, basically. So let's fast forward for a second. Yeah. We sell GroupMe to Skype.
Yeah. How does this come about? That how did Skype come knocking on their door?
We had, basically, it was a really interesting era. So all of a sudden, iMessage is announced. Google's doing like Google Hangouts or Google Plus, I think at the time. Facebook Messenger. Facebook had bought a competitor of ours and was getting into messaging more. And we were like, well, we need a partner, particularly for international, because the way our system worked with text messaging didn't work internationally really well. And we were like, Skype is this like kind of independent one that we can probably be friends with and it'll work. And the friends just turned into kind of dating and getting married.
Sure.
Yeah. And like, you know, we had another round raised and ready to go, but we ended up going on that path and we thought it was a way to really like get to scale and do something great. And yeah, and then, you know, they got acquired by Microsoft kind of simultaneously.
At the same time, right?
Kind of. I think our deal
worked a deal. And
our deal was between announcement and close of that. And then you kind of post acquisition things, they got really stuck in the integration into Microsoft land. And so GroupMe sits there today as a top, last time I checked, it was like 40 in the App Store overall. Every back to school, it jumps to like top 10. And it's like a huge.
Do you like going back and checking it now? I mean, now that you're on to.
I mean, what I love is just how well it's held up for how long. I mean, I wish Microsoft knew that they had it. I don't know.
Right.
But it's there and it's great. And it's the way that it's, you know, we pioneered so many little things that makes me feel good. Like it's the little things. It's like if you send emojis by themselves, they got big. Like that was us. Just like coming up with like little experiences. And
what else? That's pretty cool.
A lot. I mean, just like muting the groups. I basically had someone I talked to who was a PM on iMessage say that, like, you know, like part of our job was just to copy everything you guys built.
How great,
and that
a
was
feeling
like
is that?
Great in a feeling. I mean, the hardest part of that one was we hadn't checked the domains of our user base until after we had sold the company. And that's when we realized we had 12,000 Verizon employees, 7,000 Best Buy employees.
Wow.
Tons of companies were using us as Slack, including ourselves.
Wow.
And so, you know, and then once we found that out, we were like, there's an enterprise play here. And then Microsoft's like, no, we're on that. We're on top of that.
So what happens after Skype acquire you?
Yep. I had two years trying.
What do they have you do for 2 years?
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of it for me, Skype's mobile strategy, I tried to do a lot of helping them. And they were, we tried to do some monetization work for GroupMe, but then like anything we would do, Microsoft would be like, that's not going to move the needle. We don't care.
Right.
So it was like, okay. So it kind of just entered a bit of a holding pattern. We tried to do some innovations helping Skype, but they were really on their own path. It was hard to be really influential there. Like I had very different opinions on where that thing should have gone. So, you know, I let them know that it was going to be over after 2 years and that was fine.
Did you end up staying for the 2 years?
I stayed for the full two and I was gone the day after the two. You know? And it was about what to do next is kind of like was a really hard scenario situation for me because I had a long list. Idea generation, obviously not the hard part for me, to be honest. I had a very long list of stuff that was good business ideas. I had some ad things. I had like all these different things that were like really good business ideas. And then I had a list of like the crazy ideas that would be like, I'd love to go do this, but like this isn't the best business idea.
Right.
And at the top of that was this concept of kind of GitHub for music.
Where, can you explain GitHub for some of our listeners?
Yeah, so GitHub, Git is a version control system, which is basically the way that multiple people can work on software at the same time and kind of what we use to be at scale and create software and the ecosystem that the programming world has. So GitHub is basically a social layer on top of that. And it's really built, help accelerate the open ecosystem of open source software and collaboration that so much of all the tech companies you're going to interview only are capable to do this because of that ecosystem, right, to be honest. So, you know, if you think about music and the craft of creation there as, you know, all this motivation coming from music, we didn't see any parallels to this in music, like the ecosystem is almost non-existent. You really only hear about innovation on like distributions and fans. And then there's like really hardcore, like instrument level stuff for creation. But there's this middle layer that didn't really exist. It's kind of like the unsexy part of music creation, right? It's like workflow improvements and stuff.
But necessary.
Yeah. But it was at the top of this idea list that didn't make, don't do this. Literally don't, do not. And you know, I attended a conference in Colombia, the country that our now VP of engineering, Juan Pablo, organized, in which I met this guy, Matt Amanetti, who was the, I knew him through open source software and his contributions. And
How much did you know him? Because Matt eventually becomes
my co-founder. So I had only known him as a, you know, a name on the internet, but I knew I'd used a lot of software of his and I was like, he's an incredible programmer. And so I give a presentation on my GroupMe story, which, you know, is really a story. It's hard to derive too much advice from it because it's like a little bit of a lightning in a bottle type feeling, but yeah, tell the story and some important principles that, you know, I could extract from it. And he does a presentation on like the 7 programming languages you should know. And I'm just like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And there's also another person there. His name's Adam Dugeli. He's a investor at True Ventures. And I don't really spend much time with Adam there, but Matt and I start getting along. And I'm like, Matt, you need to be a founder of a company. I didn't even know that you need to be it with me. I'm just like, you got to do this. And we eventually set out on a path to try to start one together. And we don't try the Splice idea.
You don't?
No.
So what is the first idea?
We're working on this like kind of set, like we had this thing where it's like, how can we help people make progress in their life, like maximize use of their time? So it'd be like a set of like kind of questions and answers that was like, do you own an electric toothbrush?
Right.
And if you said no, it's like, look, this is like one of the most important things of your time. And it was just kind of like a, almost like a swipeable interface to helping you make progress fast. But
it
was cool, but it was really abstract. And we got stuck being like, well, do we do it for programming skills? Do we do it for this? Do we do it? So like, we kind of got stuck. And like, you know, I tell a lot of entrepreneurs, like if you can't bring yourself to work nights and weekends on whatever you're doing, you have no chance because you're going to need to work nights and weekends on the idea. Because a lot of people are like, oh, I just need to quit my job and then it'll happen. It's like, no.
You got
to
have that
prioritize
passion.
It. Yeah.
Something that's going to get you up when you're feeling miserable or when you just, it's got to drive you. So this idea, then that fizzes out and then you come
so
up
we're
with
not, we're not making a lot of great progress on it, but we're doing calls and it's just like kind of slow moving. So I go to a music festival, kind of where I go, and I'm at Camp Bisco, which is the music festival that the Disco Biscuits throw, which is the other band that Dan and I met through, Jared and I met through. And
a big theme throughout your
career. It's a theme, Disco Biscuits. So, you know, it's like a festival that 19,000 people, and John, the guitar player, the Biscuits, he had gotten into programming after GroupMe was successful. He's like, wow, this is, I can get into this, you know? And he's walking on stage literally. And he's like, you want me to tell you my best idea? And he's like, GitHub for music. And I was like, okay.
Wow.
So this idea is sitting at the top of my do not do list, but then the artist side who got into programming sees it as well. And it just flipped it over the line where I'm like, I'm going to say this to Matt. And we said it to Matt, and Matt kicked off and was like, wait, I think I could do that. And like, he started working and the inspiration just started flowing. And right. like, that's kicked it all off.
Wow. So that moment, and that's when you're like, this guy's telling me this. I'm hearing it. This isn't any performer. This is
it came
top
from
level.
The direction that made a difference to me. And right. that got me over the line of maybe it's not so crazy after all. And look, it's still to this day. I mean, like, you know, doing anything in music is still pretty crazy.
I've learned that just from my experience in, you know, working at an agency that was heavily in music. It just seemed like music is this one business that's like still the Wild West and like crazy deals on napkins. And I mean, just and there's so much now, obviously, with streaming and there's so many changes. So
but there's so many dead bodies of companies that have tried to be innovative. Right. So venture capital was like, who's going to touch this? And you had to go out there and really understand that like a revolution has occurred. And the revolution is that like software is the primary instrument and software can change this like drive that humans have to create music. Like we think a third of the world tries at some point. Think about public school playing the recorder and different things like that. And if we can, you know, I think what people like, I've picked up the guitar again recently for the first time in like 15 years. And like the decay curve of people who fail is like high. You get frustrated and you give up, right? But software really has a chance to change that. And I think that and the middle class of musicians that's emerging from the streaming era has created this like revolutionary moment where you can really, kids are really inspired to create. Parents are supportive of them doing
this. You know, I noticed that I've got two girls and they're young and the one thing I love about them, like, I mean, I hate technology in certain ways and when they're on their iPhones and looking at Instagram, but when they would do these Musical.ly videos, TikTok now, and like, they would be creating. And like, I was like, this is a form of creating stories, storytelling. Tell me about Splice. Is that give just, I know you guys have something like 2.5
3 million users.
3 million now. Yeah. Okay. 3 million users.
So we'll talk this. So there's this desire to create that you're seeing, right? And so the ecosystem of creation in music is like, where do you get started? How do you work with each other? How do you collaborate? Like there's this, it's just like kind of all dark. And like the entry point for so many people is to steal software. Really, piracy. We saw something like a 99% piracy rate in the space. And, you know, it's fueled from like some broken business models, broken user experiences, and kind of being a bit of like a decade behind in terms of like what the modern musician or modern user, technology user would think to expect from software. And so Splice came in the beginning just trying to bring the kind of cloud connectivity to the software in the space to be the backup and version control system, and which was basically how do we collaborate? How do we get the cloud functionality into the existing software? And then it kind of evolved further into being a way to enable collaboration through one way of collaborating that people really understand, which is using each other's samples. And so our biggest product right now is called Splice Sounds, and it's a library of millions of samples and loops that you can use royalty-free in your music.
Want to use it on my podcast for my intro now.
We've got a ton of sound effects. We've got a ton of, you know, it's really fun for that. So like the thing, it is applicable to like all audio, but we were really focused on music today. Right. But now, like when you think of sampling, you always just think of like people ripping off each other's stuff.
Yeah, and you
like,
always hear about, you know, this artist ripped off the whatever it might be.
But this is content that's originally created for using for in your tracks. And we've built this ecosystem for the modern musician that is, you know, a way it feels like you have the entire world in your kind of at your fingertips to just be able to create and pull inspiration from. So we've got something like 3 million registered users of our like subscriber base. It's something like 60 million samples get listened to on our platform every week. And that's just crazy. People are in there listening to sounds all day long. And the sounds range from like a guy who hit a piece of bamboo on a table to, you know, sound effects. Like I have a 2-minute sword fight if you need that for your podcast.
Maybe that could be good.
So like, you know, kind of more full instrumentals and vocals. Yeah. And it's really blown up, you know. It's used in tons of top 40 music, and it's used by the kids who are playing Fortnite or making music with Splice.
Oh, right, sure.
Paid out over $20 million to artists for their sounds now, too.
Wow. Which is just, how does that work for the artist? So give me the business model and the example where artists are actually making money by by listing their...
So all these sounds are created by someone, right? And so they get to put them on our platform, and we take the subscription revenue because it's a subscription service, starts at $7.99 a month. Mm-hmm. And a pro rata share is distributed out to our artists every month and of who gets downloaded. And, you know, it's become a really important part of developing your career as an artist now. There's these amazing stories of people, you know, there's a duo named Gray that were working at Fuddruckers and put their stuff on Splice, made enough money to quit their full-time jobs, had
that.
A top 40 hit four months later with Zed on a track called Starvin', and then had Grammy nominated track of the year for The Middle.
All from their original.
Well, I mean, their creations, but their ability to go, you know, they just need to go full-time.
Yeah.
You know, and we kind of like, by giving artists the ability to create checks for just a piece of their work, we're creating more seats at the table for music, for musicians.
Yeah, because it seems like prior to this and musicians, it's like, it must have been so difficult. It sounds like there's nothing like this. Even the amount, like, to go into a studio to record, like, I mean, just with technology now and with what you guys are offering, it sounds like you've really leveled the playing field for any type of artist.
So I think I look at it very similarly to what I was able to do with software that powered that GroupMe hackathon. So for me, like, the way I could build that in 24 hours is because I was standing on top of all this other work people have done and not trying to recreate stuff that's been done before.
Right.
I used Ruby on Rails, the Twilio API. Like, you know, Heroku to host on. And I was like, how do I just focus on what I'm good at? And it was delivering this business value and delivering this, like, real experience. And, like, you know, with music now, you can go, especially with Splice, you can go as high or low through the creation stack as you want. You know, you could find a loop that's just inspiring you and write something on top of it, you know, like, or you could go all the way down to original, you know, like, I'm going to make my own snare sound. But we have tens of thousands to maybe 100,000 snare drums on the platform. Right. So, like, the ability to kind of just focus on what part you're good at and derive inspiration from, like, kind of all over the place is, it reminds me of the same open ecosystem we're trying to build. We say we're trying to let creativity flow by fostering an open ecosystem for musicians. And that just is such a huge parallel to what, you know, was inspiring me from the software space.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it makes so much sense now, thinking about GroupMe originally and now Splice, and this kind of way where people can work with others, take from others, share with others, where it's going to enable them to build their own business or a bigger business. And tell me, like, today and nowadays, like, with the business, how are you enjoying it? Because, you know, a lot of people follow their passion and then sometimes it's like, oh, I wish I could just enjoy my passion and, you know, go back to just following fish. Or has it been as enjoyable building a business in something you're passionate about?
Yes, for me, the thing I love about Splice is it is the splicing together of all of my passions, from software, from live music. Like, the vision statement is a world of more transcendent musical highs, which is, like, for the fans to get the music that they spiritually connect to, but then for the artists to stay in their flow state of creation. Like, you know, when we can keep you inspired and creating and not fighting your self-doubts and fighting the frustrations of technology, you can make progress fast. So the challenges are very different. The hardest thing is the transition from that founder to CEO. And that's been, you know, my ongoing learning, back in learning mode.
Has this been hard for you?
I just think it's a different set of challenges that I hadn't done before. You know, you get into a lot more people management, you have to think about how to think about growing an entire team and a culture as opposed to just solving individual problems.
Right.
But, like, I'm excited about the challenge. I think that it's the ability to bring things truly to scale, because I believe Splice can become this, I like to say, the most iconic company in music history, because I believe that we can keep putting together solving the needs of creators into this open ecosystem and just bite off more and more parts of the creation process. And I want to be able to kind of shepherd that into existence. And I think the best way to do that is to continue to grow.
It's good. Perfect.
Cool.
Well, listen, totally appreciate coming on today. I know what I didn't say is we're sitting in this great studio, which I have not done a podcast from, like, a studio like this at Splice headquarters here in the, I guess we'd call it the Flatiron District,
Flatiron.
Right?
Yep.
But yeah, I feel kind of with my podcast equipment here a little bit like low self-esteem, considering what's going on in this room. But looks like with everything you've done, you guys are certainly way, way on your way, and hope to hear about more and more businesses down the road. And thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.